welcome back to the Functional Nerds. My name is Patrick Hester. I'm back. I was gone last week.
He's back. He's back. Sorry.
What is
welcome
that?
Back, Patch.
What's that from?
It's Back in Black.
Oh.
It's not a very good rendition of Back in Black.
You know, I wanted to tell people that Halloween is coming up. And I enjoy Halloween a lot. It's like my patron holiday for some reason. I don't know. I just really like to scare people. I don't know about you, John. Do you like to scare people?
It's not my trip, really. Okay. Not my trip.
Well, never mind then.
Well, anyway, I am John Anilio. I write songs about science fiction, fantasy, and other nerdy things. You can get all my music for Name Your Price, including free, over at johnanilio.com. You can follow me at twitter.com/johnanilio, and that is Patrick Hester. You can go to his Yay. Website, atfmb.com, and follow him on Twitter, at atfmb. So what is going on this week, Patrick?
It's depressing.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's going to World Fantasy except us.
I know. It is depressing. You know, and I didn't think too much about it until the last couple of days, because I guess it's coming up this weekend. And, you know, Patrick and I both had so much fun at World Fantasy last year, and World Fantasy just sold out really quick. It's also, it's in San Diego, which means I would have to fly. So, and hotels are more expensive in San Diego than they are in other. Last year it was in Ohio, so I was able to drive, although I would not recommend doing that, the New Jersey to Ohio drive. But I was able to drive, and the hotel was, you know, reasonable for a con hotel, I guess. So it was doable, but this year it just wasn't really doable. But I am bummed because we did have a lot of fun and met a lot of our friends in person for the first time and met most of our Functional Nerds contributors there. So it's a little depressing that we're not going to be there.
If they loved us, they wouldn't go.
Yeah.
No, I'm
yeah. But anyway,
no, they're like, yeah, we don't love you that much. Sorry. No.
So by the time this airs, World Fantasy will be over. So yes. I hope you had a good time.
Yeah.
But anyway, another non-World Fantasy attendee is our guest tonight, and that is Brian Thomas Schmidt. Brian has a book called The Worker Prince out right now, and he tells us a little bit about that. And we talked about a lot of interesting things. We talked a little bit about working with a small press as opposed to self-publishing or working with a large press. We actually broke one of our rules and talked a little bit about religion. So that was kind of a real interesting discussion. I was glad to have that. And talk a little bit about blogging and social media and all that jazz too, and I hope you enjoy this interview. And on the line with us tonight, we have Brian Thomas Schmidt. Brian is the author of The Worker Prince, which is out right now, and we would like to talk a little bit about that as well as some other things. Brian, say hello.
Hey, how are you guys tonight?
We are doing just fine. Thanks for joining us.
I'm cold.
A lot of things. Patrick is cold. Now,
snow's coming.
Snow is coming in Denver, correct. But, you know, Brian, Patrick and I met Brian at World Fantasy last year, and before we actually got in line, we were all lamenting that none of us are going to it this year. But we did meet Brian last year and got a chance to hang out with him a bit there, and we're happy to have him on the podcast so he can talk about his book, which is out right now. And Brian, maybe there's a bunch of different things I'd like to talk to you about, but you know, why don't you tell us a little bit first about The Worker Prince as a novel. What's it about? How would you classify it within the speculative fiction realm?
Well, the quick pitch is Moses meets Star Wars. It's the Moses story. Basically, the whole setup of the story is the Moses story, but after that, I kind of depart from it. There's no parting of the Red Sea. There's no Ten Commandments, none of that stuff.
Is there a wicker basket?
You know, I didn't put any wicker baskets in there, Patrick. Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. And no heroes have a hat like yours. I had to leave it your trademark, you know. I had to do that.
Thank you.
Yeah, but I did name a character 20 years later in a short story I wrote in that universe, Hest, after you.
Well, I appreciate that.
I just wanted you to know that. Actually, you know, it's basically a story about a guy who's raised as a prince, who discovers he was secretly adopted and is really born a slave. And when he discovers what it really means to be a slave, he objects to it on moral grounds, starts to raise some questions, and ends up in conflict with the ruling family, which happens to be his adoptive family. And then the tragedy happens that forces him to go on the run, and he ends up fighting alongside the workers to help them fight for freedom. It's got a lot of, you know, cool vehicles and space battles and guns and a little bit of romance in it and some aliens, and you know, it's kind of, it's, so it's definitely, I tried to capture the feel of Star Wars A New Hope, and most of the readers tell me that's kind of what it feels like to read.
Awesome. Well, you know, I'm glad you brought it up, the whole Moses part of it, because this is one of the things I wanted to bring up, and I'm going to break one of our rules. Patrick usually will tell guests that, you know, we could talk about anything except politics, religion, and barbecue. But I do want to talk a little bit about religion with you, because obviously if you're basing this on the Moses story, or if that's a component of it, you know, that's clearly a religious aspect to the work. And I know just from following you on Twitter and Facebook and all that and talking to you, that religion does play a part in your life. And I find it kind of interesting because I think there, within science fiction, most, now I personally, and you don't have to get into your personal stuff, you know, personally, I'm an atheist, but, and that seems to be a lot of people in the science fiction world tend to sort of, you know, lean towards that side. Maybe I shouldn't generalize, but that's been sort of my understanding. But there seems to be within the science fiction community, there also seems to be a more religious part, a more, in specifically a more Christian kind of part of the science fiction world. So I wanted you to maybe, I don't know, talk about that. Like, what is the significance of that, and how do you sort of see, you know, maybe that part of your life with your sort of your science fiction writing life?
Oh, I got you. Well, there are some pretty big names that I could probably name five or six decent known writers who are Christians who write science fiction. One being Brent Weeks, another being Timothy Zahn, and there are several others as well. And there is, of course, a whole Christian speculative fiction movement thing that's going on as well. But for me, I don't find as many. Can you hear my dogs fighting in the background?
Yes, my dogs
are fighting in the background.
I was wondering what that was. Are we picking up an EVP?
Wow, it's like we're really getting angry about this, man.
I'm fighting demons even as we speak. you know, for me, I do feel like I'm a minority when it comes to the science fiction and fantasy community at large, which is fine because I'm not out to convert anybody or change anybody's mind, and I certainly enjoy the dialogue and the opportunity for me to expand my world and understand people with a different point of view. I've always celebrated that. I did some missionary work. I did some cross-cultural teaching. You know well, John, because you teach, that when you teach, you have to go in there and put aside your preconceived notions and try to figure out where the kids are coming from and where the students are coming from and try to help them get things on their level. And so I'm really used to thinking that way and working that way and enjoy that. So it's interesting to me to be around people who are different and have different points of view.
Yeah, well, you know, and that's been, you know, my experience. I happen to be pretty good sort of online friends with a lot of those folks. And that's kind of what I like about them, is that I know this is something that's important to them. Their faith is important to them, but I never feel like they're pushing it on anybody, or at least I don't feel like they're pushing it on me. And I think that's, you know, that's important as a, you know, if we're just talking about sort of a community, and when I say community, I'm talking about our sort of speculative fiction community online. And I think it's healthy to have those different points of view, and everyone seems very civil about it, and I like that. And that's why I wanted to kind of bring it up, because I know sometimes, you know, you will have people, and it works on both sides of the fence. That is, like, as soon as they hear that somebody is, so say you're atheist, you find out someone's a Christian, it's like, well, not reading them, because that's not what I believe, so forget it, I'm not even going to go near it. And I think it's important to sort of talk about these things. It's like, yeah, everyone's a little different, everyone's going to have their own point of view on things, and I don't think you should sort of banish someone outright just because of whatever their faith may be.
Well, and I made a deliberate choice, which was a risky choice with the book, to put Christianity in the book, but not for purposes of trying to, again, push a religion or point of view, but because the heart of the Moses story for me is an ideological battle. It's about bigotry. And there is an ideological bigotry, and there's a racial bigotry aspect to it. And so I wanted to explore both as well, and I saw the opportunity to parallel some of the ideological things we see going on in the world today especially in the United States, and thought that it would bring it, connect it more with readers. So I kind of put, you know, there is an evangelical characters in the story. Not all of them are evangelical, and nobody goes through a conversion, and there are no real preachy aspects to it. I worked really hard on that. In fact, I deliberately had my beta readers were all atheist or agnostic on purpose, because I was like, okay, if I get preachy or they get offended, then I know I've gone too far or I've done it wrong. And so I really vetted that and worked hard. But I felt like that was an aspect of world building and milieu for the space opera that I had never seen. So it was an opportunity for me to do something different, but that worked within the context of the Moses story. And I have had people who rejected it just because they're like, oh, you should have made up a religion. I could accept it if it was a made-up religion, but if it's a real religion, I'm offended. Which, to me, it doesn't make a lot of sense. I'm like, look, you don't have to believe it. If I wrote a blog entry about this the other day. Look, if I did not read anything by anybody who does not share my point of view, I would hardly read any books. I mean, even within the Christian community, there's a lot of people who I don't 100% share their point of view. So if I was not going to read any books, I might as well forget about being a part of fandom for science fiction and fantasy, for sure, and probably a lot of other literature, too.
Yeah, you know, and it's funny that you bring it, like, sort of making up a religion, because it's like so often in particularly in fantasy, you know, the I'm doing air quotes now that Patrick can see, the made up religions are so almost blatantly like, this is the Christian religion, this is Islam, and they don't like each other, you know, and it's like, it's almost like, so, you know, they just change the names, that it's like, all right, well, what's the problem if you actually use the real, you know, the real names? I mean, I think
we have changed the names to protect the innocent.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. It's, you know, it's Jeebus right, instead of Jeez.
Yeah, right. Our Lord Jeebus Christ.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, so, exactly. So, I mean, but I think, you know, and especially, you know, I've often gone on record here saying that I'm more of a fantasy reader than I am a science fiction, although I do like science fiction. And, you know, you brought up Star Wars. And the other thing I bring up a lot is that, you know, Star Wars is essentially space fantasy more than, or I should say science fantasy more than science fiction, because, you know, you sort of have these mythological hero's journey kind of aspects to it. And, you know, when you're dealing
my story is too.
Yeah, yeah, and that's the thing. So it's really, you know, when you're dealing with fantasy almost always has something to do with religion. There is some religion or mythology. There's something going on. I can barely think of a fantasy that doesn't have that as at least a minor point of it. Even like, you know, the George R. R. Martin stuff, which you wouldn't think of has a lot of that. That's still like an undercurrent of like what people believe, because if you're going to set something that's supposed to be in that time, that's what people believed. So well, I don't think you can get away from it.
What's interesting about the George R. R. Martin thing is that the one of the things that is, again, the reason that I always say let's not talk about politics, religion, or barbecue is because these are the polarizing subjects, at least in this country. And mm-hmm. and one of the most polarizing things with the fandom of George R. R. Martin is the religious aspects of the books. Anytime, people get, like, violent when they talk about it.
What specifically about it? I'm curious, because I haven't read the newest Martin book, and so the last time I read his books was whenever Feast of Crows came out, which is like 5 or 6 years ago. So what particular aspects of the religion are we talking about there?
They just don't like that it's in there. They think that it should be
pure.
It's
funny that they don't like that, because, you know, George R. R. Martin makes some very strong statements about how silly he thinks religion is. I mean, there's quotes on the fronts of books, blurbs and things I've seen that kind of made me a little bit upset with him, because he was so disrespectful of people that you know, to him, it has no reason to it whatsoever. So it's ridiculous. And so he's obviously not trying to sell anybody religion. So it's funny that people object to that. At the same time, you've got the change by S.M. Sterling. And I interviewed S.M. Sterling for SFF Right Chat, and I asked him about it. I said, okay, well, the bad guy in your story is kind of this church here that you have. And is that because you're anti-church? And he said, I'm an atheist, but he said, I see the importance of faith for inspiring people, and I don't think you can realistically build a world that modern readers relate to without dealing with faith. Because faith is one of those motivators, like romance and love and lust, that – everybody has to reckon with, because it's, you know, if you want to understand characters, you got to understand what their belief is.
Right, exactly.
So it's kind of foundational. So I it's funny to me when people, you know, automatically the subject of religion and science fiction. There was a blog post recently I saw where they basically said that it was totally incompatible and they were total enemies. And I just thought that was silly, because, you know, there's a lot of people who can reconcile the two, and there's people who can't. And I think it's far more complicated than that. It's not black and white at all.
Interesting.
So, Brian, why don't we talk a little bit about how you chose to publish this? You know, I think a lot of people that listen to the show are writers or aspiring writers. And as if they're working on a completed manuscript, you know, they have to decide, do I want to try to do this traditional New York publishing? Do I want to try to go with a small press? Do I want to self-publish? A lot of people do that nowadays with all the Kindle stuff. And your book is put out through a smaller press. What sort of made that decision for you? You know, was that where you, that decide was the most comfortable thing for you? You know, maybe you could talk us through a little bit what you were thinking about and deciding on using a small press for this book.
Well, I went out to agents and only got a few responses where they looked at it. Didn't get anybody that was interested enough to sign me. Got some good compliments on it, but, you know. And then I sent it out to the large slush piles like Bayon and Tor and some of these places. And, you know, and I finally heard back from a couple of them after I had already signed a deal with the small press. And they said, oh, do you want us to still look at it? So, I mean, it was the kind of thing where I thought about the whole process. And ultimately, what decided it for me was that they were so passionate. I had three small presses, and they were so passionate about the book. And they were so excited about it. And the one Diminished Media that I'm with, they almost, it was like they talked about the book with more love than I do almost. You know what I mean? That's kind of a good thing when you're a writer to have your publisher be almost more of a fan of your book than you are. You know, of course, by the time you get published, you're so sick of the thing because you've been working at it for so long. But, you know, it was exciting to have people that had that kind of level of enthusiasm. They were people that I knew I had a good rapport with because I published a short stories with them in their online zine, Digital Dragon magazine. And they made me the best contract offer of the three presses. The advantage of it was because of the time I took negotiating with the three presses, I actually got editorial notes for most of them that I was able to use to make the book better. So I got free editing advice in addition to the editors who went over it again with me from my publisher that I signed with. But my thing was, I wanted to be a published author, and I wanted to be legitimately published. I ruled out self-publishing. Now, I don't mean to put anybody down who self-publishes. I self-published a collection to get something out there that I could give people that was published a year before this ever came out, a couple years before this ever came out. But there's still a stigma on self-publishing, and there's still something about being professional that I don't have to weed myself out of the wheat from the chaff, so to speak, near as much, because somebody actually paid me for my book and was willing to publish it and work with me on it. It just automatically put me the next level, rather than having to fight to say, okay, yeah, I'm self-published, but mine is one of the good ones, not one of the crap. You know, I didn't have to do that. All those kind of things were actually in my mind. So that's kind of how the decision came about. And then, you know, like I said, they made me a really good offer. And that makes a big deal, too, when you get the contract. I did not get a really good monetary offer, but I did get really good percentages of profit, and I did get really good creative control. I got final approval of the cover, the interior. You know, I got a lot of control over rights outside of the contract. They didn't try to ask for a lot of things other than what they needed to just publish the book in ebook and trade paperback. I have a clause that I can get out of the contract with a small fee if I get a better deal from a bigger publisher. So there's lots of things that I got because I was dealing with a small press that you wouldn't get dealing with a larger press. And so that when you put all those factors together, I figured that since I didn't have any big presses or agents breathing down my neck trying to get the book, that this was a way to go ahead and get my career started and get a book out there that I was passionate about in a legitimate way. And there were certain advantages to it, too.
Well, and I think you make a good point about that, because I think there is, you know, people perceive things differently. And I think self-publishing is certainly has a lot more respect than it did even a few years ago. But I think you are seeing a lot of people doing self-publishing now. And I think the people that are having the most success with it are the people that are also traditionally published. You know, it seems like everybody's going to, at some point, almost everybody is going to self-publish something. You know, so it seems like the best mix is to kind of have a little bit of both. And as someone who is, you know, an up and coming writer, I think making the choice to go with a small press is a good one. Like you say, because it does sort of automatically afford you a level of respect. Because, I mean, you're right. There can be so many great things that are out there self-published, but so much of it is bad too that it is hard to rise above that. And I think by using a small press is a good way to rise above that.
Well, if you're a Christine Catherine Rusch or a Dean Wesley Smith, or you're a Mike Resnick, all three of these are people that I know do some self-publishing, and they do it because they're putting their catalog of previously published books that the rights are reverted to them. And they're putting their backlist on and making it available to people because they know they still have people who want to buy it and they can still make a living from it. And that's great. They've got a reputation. People know that they're getting quality with them. They know they're going to go the extra step to get it edited, to give it that professional polish. That's a step that a lot of people don't want to pay for and don't want to do when they're doing self-publishing, which ends up usually being a mistake. Then you have people like Moses Sirigar. I don't know if you had Moses on or not.
We have,
Moses,
yeah.
Okay, Moses is with Adventures in Sci-Fi Publishing. He's a great guy, another guy I met at World Fantasy. We were roommates there. And Moses' book is excellent. He spent a lot of money editing it, working on it, developing it, and had people who are published authors telling him this is ready to go before he ever put it out there. So, you know, he's done very well with self-publishing, but I would say he's still the exception to the rule. And that's the thing that I felt like I had enough strikes against me trying to promote myself as a new author without having to deal with that stigma.
Mm-hmm. Well, and, you know, another thing that Resnick and Tobias Bakel just did with Kickstarter, which is a crowdfunding platform out there that I think most of our listeners are aware of, is that they are taking... They'll have a series that was published traditionally, and they write sort of the next book in that series that's not being published anymore, and they just put that out as a self-published thing. And I think that's an interesting way to go about doing it too. So that works as well, because you already have an audience from, you know, the previous books. Now, you know, maybe it's because the publisher just doesn't want to publish it. I know with like Tobias Bakel's books, and I read the first book in that series, Crystal Rain. And those are published through Tor, and they did good. They did well, but they didn't do great. And I think Tor was like, well, let's do something else. They still wanted to publish him, but they wanted him to go and write a different series. But he still liked that series, so he wanted to write another book in that series. So he crowdfunded it so that he can go out and write it and do all those things, like you said, get it professionally edited, get it professionally laid out. And I'm sure that will sell just fine, you know, as a sub. But you know, he sort of has the sort of reputation and has been published through Tor. So it's a different thing than just, you know, Joe Blow going to put his book out on Kindle. Although Joe Blow has written some great stuff. So let us not discount Joe Blow.
That's right.
Didn't he write a series of jokes that were wrapped around bubblegum?
Yes. Those were excellent. Bazooka Joe. Oh, that's right.
It's Joe Blow Sr. that's okay. Joe Blow Jr., he's a hack. You gotta watch out for him. You gotta be careful. And forget Joe Blow III. He can't even spell. I mean, it's just,
yeah.
No, but I didn't know that Resnick had done it, but I do know that Tobias had done it, and I think great. He's got an established series. He wants to wrap it up well for himself, for his readers, and do the remainder of the books or whatever stories he has. I think that's great, and I'm sure he'll do just fine. I think, you know, the advantage of self-publishing is, especially when you've got that built-in audience, some of your marketing works for itself. And he's got a built-in market of people that are going to already want it, and so that makes it a little bit easier. plus the whole, of course, all the reputation stuff we already talked about. So I think that distinguishes it too. But I think one of the things that you run into that is a challenge for you, and I blogged about this for you guys, is, you know, if even if you go with a big press, marketing is becoming more and more the responsibility of the writer as opposed to the press. The budgets are really going down as far as publicity and publicists and all those kind of things. And so it has kind of, it's kind of a transformation that some writers are uncomfortable making, because there are guys, especially some of the guys who have been out there for a long time and like to sit in the room and write and let somebody else take care of publicizing and selling the books, because they're really extreme introverts or they don't feel like they present themselves well. It's a challenge. I think, you know, I'm a performer like you, John. I'm kind of a little bit extroverted. I don't have a problem getting out in front of people and communicating and talking. So it doesn't intimidate me the way it does other people. Standing in front of a classroom of people who are ready to mock you for a while will do that for anybody. Get you ready to deal with that. You know, I mean, it's just part of that, the reality. But I think that, you know, for me, one of the things is you've got to think about, when you make that choice, marketing, because a small press doesn't have a budget to put thousands of dollars into marketing that the big press is still going to have. Even with a big press, more and more I hear stories of people who, they will test you. They will give you a questionnaire. Somebody told me they filled out a 20-page questionnaire for one of the big publishers asking about their marketing, their website, their social media use, all the marketing plans they had, all that stuff, their platform, before they were even willing to sign a deal with them, because the big publisher was still expecting them to do a lot of that work. But at the same time, when you get a small press, it doesn't even matter, because, you know, like there was somebody who wanted to sign with Diminished Media after my book came out. They got a lot more excited about signing with them because of all the publicity I got. And then my publisher said, well, yeah, but the author did most of that himself. And the guy said, what? It's just the realities of that part of the world, you know, the publishing world.
I was talking to someone, and I won't name any names, but I was talking to someone who told me that their publisher actually sort of vetted them as far as they looked at, they went to a convention and they watched how this person interacted with people and how they, you know, composed themselves and comported themselves and just how they acted at this convention, because they wanted to know if this was a person who was going to be able to market themselves before they ever signed them. And I was taken aback by that. I was like, wow, really? And they said, yeah, it was very strange, but, you know, it's becoming part of the reality of all this. And if you're a procrastinating introvert like myself with borderline dyslexia and ADHD, you're screwed. No, I'm just kidding. I'm trying to throw a bunch of stuff out there.
I don't have dyslexia, but I have ADHD, and it hasn't screwed me over. But those extra energy bursts can come in handy, Patrick.
I've told you this before, Brian. I've always said that I honestly do believe that I am undiagnosed.
Yeah,
but that I do have ADHD, which is high def, because I don't focus often, but when I do, it's crystal clear.
When I'm out of focus, man, it's crystal clear out of focus.
Well, you know, and Brian, one of the things that I wanted to bring up, because it's something that you're really doing, which I think is one of the reasons why you are getting a good amount of notoriety for your work, is that we talk a lot about social media, Twitter and Facebook on the show, and you're certainly active there. But one thing that I've noticed that you're doing, especially – well, I've noticed it recently. You might have been doing it for a long time before that. I noticed that you've really kicked your blogging into high gear. It seems like on your own site, you have a lot of different posts, especially like a lot of, you know, 10 things you should look for in a beta reader. And you've been doing guest posts and things. And I'm, although I've slowed down on the blogging, I was trying to kick my blogging up. And then as I was working on this recent song, I had to sort of put it all aside for a while to finish up this tune. But what is your feeling about the blogging, and have you found that it has helped you to build an audience and to generate some interest for your book?
Well, first of all, thank you for saying that I'm getting notoriety, because I'm flattered. That's kind of cool to hear. Second of all, I have obviously done something right with the blogging because I get 2,200 hits a month on average now on my website. And even when I don't have something new for a few days, I get a steady number of hits. So it's obvious that something has happened in what I'm doing. Now, I think that the blogging is a big part of that. The main thing I'm doing is I'm following the rules of social media and blogging. And one of the rules of blogging is you've got to be consistent. If you are going to blog, you not only need to find topics that work for you, that people like to hear what you have to say on, and stick with those topics as much as you can. It's not that you can't every once in a while diverge and talk about other things. And I do that sometimes. One of my most popular posts was a post about the breakup of my marriage and the situation I dealt with my wife. It was a very emotional post, and people really connected with it. But that has nothing to do with what I blog about most of the time, which is writing stuff. The tips post you're talking about, 7 tips for being a great beta reader, 9 tips for character development, those kind of things. What I do is I post those every Thursday, and every Monday I post something else. And then other days, if I have something extra, I'll post it. And because I'm consistent, I get retweeted a lot, and Sci-Fi Signal puts me on their list, and people who file Stalker in some of those places, and I've been lucky enough to be able to get consistent readership that has grown my blog. But I think the other thing is, the fact that I have the chat, has Science Fiction and Fantasy Writers Chat, which is on Wednesdays at 9 Eastern Time, if anybody doesn't know what that is, on Twitter. I interview all those different people. You guys know about it because you were guests on the chat. Mm-hmm. But
it's essentially a place for me to heckle whatever author you have on.
We've missed you lately. Where have you been? You haven't been heckling anybody.
Well, I also record a podcast at that same time. So sometimes I can't switch back and forth. Sometimes I can multitask. Sometimes I can't. Depends.
Okay. I think it's the bribery I've been sending towards John. He's keeping you busy and keeping you off my back. It's working.
You know what I was going to say? You know what? You talk about your popular posts on your blog. You know what are the most popular posts that on my blog that get hits all the freaking time? My reviews of comic books that I did like last year. I don't know why. That and my random thoughts.
Yeah, but your random thoughts are funny, and you put it to you have your own style of putting it together in a way that, it definitely is rambling, but there's a certain style of it, and it's fun to read, and that's what you have to do, Pat. That's what you have to do is capture where is the voice that I have for this that people are going to like, and then you have to be consistent about it, and the advantage of having the chat is, I talk to professional editors, publishers, writers, and science fiction and fantasy people about craft and business of writing once a week. And in between, people look me up and talk to me about it. So I get all kinds of writing tips all the time. So I can always pull quotes out of my chat transcript and turn it into how to deal with writer's block. That was one of my posts where I quoted from Mary Robinette Cole and Paul Kemp and different people I'd had on the chat. And I get all this information that helps me grow as a writer, which was the whole point of doing the chat. And I, in turn, try to pass it on to other people through the blog posts. And so that has been huge in helping me grow my craft, but also helping me grow a voice.
Very good. Well, that's great, Brian. Well, I was thinking like we should probably start wrapping it up kind of soon here. So do you guys want to talk about your project that you guys have going on, or can we not talk about that? Or
I think it's public knowledge.
Okay,
Brian, and I don't mind if you want to talk about it. Is there anything else you wanted to talk about?
No. Well, what I would like to, I would like you to tell our audience about that, and tell me, because so Brian is editing an anthology, and Patrick has a story in said anthology. So I thought maybe you guys can talk a bit about that.
Before you do that, we do need to tell people, if they miss the chats on Wednesday night, they also end up over on Grasping for the Wind eventually.
Oh, yes, definitely, yeah.
About 6 weeks later,
yeah.
I do a column every Thursday where it's a cleaned-up version of the Chitter. That's what I call it, a Twitter chat, a chitter. The transcript for the Twitter chat is cleaned up, and it's a little easier to read and a little more organized. And those tend to get you see those popping up on Sci-Fi Signal, but they're the main area where they run is Grasping for the Wind. You'll see links to them in various places.
It cracks me up that everybody says Sci-Fi Signal. It's SF Signal.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
And you're not the only one. Tons of people do that, and I actually told DiNardo about that one time. He's like, yeah, I don't care. Yeah, well, it's the same thing. It's the same thing. It's science fiction. Yeah.
Look, as long as you give the man a bagel, he doesn't care. He's happy.
Exactly.
You know, is it an SF bagel or a sci-fi? I don't care. Give me the damn bagel.
Right.
He's fine.
So you sent me an invitation.
I had the opportunity to edit an anthology on the theme of space battles, which is basically ship versus ship warfare outside the atmosphere of Earth somewhere in the universe. And I got Mike Resnick was willing to write an original story for it and be a headliner for me. And Gene Johnson, who's a published author as well, has several books out. She was willing to do that. And so I invited a bunch of different people, some with more experience than others, to come and write stories for this anthology. And you were one of them. And you made it into the final cut. I've got 17 stories going up in the anthology. I'm in the final stages of editing it. And it'll come out April 12th or so of next year from Flying Pen Press.
And here's what's funny. So I never really recommend that people do things the way I do things, because I usually do things the hard way, because I always have to figure it out for myself. And here's what's funny. Brian invited me, and I thought, okay, so I can do a space battle short story. And so I sat down and I started writing something, and I said, oh my God, this is crap. And I threw it away. And then I started again, and I threw that away. And then I started again, and I threw that away. And then I said, screw this. I can't write a space battle short story to save my life. And the deadline actually passed. I don't know if you remember this, Brian. The deadline passed. And you sent out another email saying, hey, look, I still have some slots open or something. You know, I could use some more if anybody's still interested. And I'm like, I got to try this again. I can do this. And then that's the story. That's the story that I ended up writing and sending to you. That you were like, "Oh, cool. Yeah, I like this. Okay."
Well, I mean, the thing about it was, so much of the stuff that I got was military sci-fi, which is fine.
But are we talking like Scalzi here?
We're talking like a lot of the David Weber, Bayon, you know, that kind of stuff.
Okay.
You know, a little mix of probably some Ender's Game mix too, but a lot of it was just, you know, very much in the, you know, even a little touch of John Ringo, maybe. I mean, there's a lot of that type of stuff. And I was like, I knew that my story was going to be a worker print story, and it was going to be 20 years in the future to my novel series. And I knew that that was going to be space fantasy, space opera, and going to have a lighter touch and a little bit more humor to it. And you gave me basically that same kind of story, which was great, because we have a story that deals with the issue of abortion. We have the story that deals with the issue of, you know, fathers fighting sons. We have, you know, we have some pretty heavy-handed stuff in here. And we also, of course, we have a Amish space trucker story too, but that's a whole different thing. But I mean, I definitely needed some humor. So I was glad to get something lighter from you. And I know your sense of humor, because we joke around and give each other crap all the time online and different stuff. And so, you know, you captured your personality pretty well in the story in a lot of ways. And I like the good part of his personality, John. I just want to say that.
Oh, that's good. Oof.
Yeah, people don't believe me when I tell them that John holds me back a lot.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not that crazy, John, really. No, it was the good side. But no, you did a good job, and it was fun to read, and I thought, okay, it was one of my favorite stories that I bought for the anthology, so it was good.
Thank you.
Sweet, sweet. Well, let's wrap it up here. So, Brian, why don't you throw out your website and your Twitter and all that jazz and let people know where they can pick up the worker prints.
Okay, at Brian Thomas S., so that's BrianThomass is my Twitter handle. www.brianthomasschmidt.net. I can't even say it myself. Also with two S's is my website. So just spell out my full name. And you can buy through Amazon, through Smashwords, through Barnes & Noble, or on my website store. You can buy my book. It's available for, you know, in various ebook formats as well as in the trade paperback.
Fantastic, Panthers. Well, Brian, thanks so much for joining us. We'll have to have you back on in April when the anthology comes out.
That sounds great. Thanks for having me, guys.
All right, thanks. And we're back. Well, I hope you enjoyed that interview with Brian. We were glad to have him on, and he actually wrote some stuff for us for Functional Nerd, so go and check all of that out. For me this week, nothing big. Well, now it's November, so I will probably start putting my NaNoWriMo song out there again. I wrote a song. I actually, even though I am not a writer, one of the things that got me into all this crazy speculative fiction world and writing songs about it is that a few years ago, I did NaNoWriMo, and actually did it twice and completed it twice. And that sort of led me on the path to becoming friends with writers and write songs. And here I find myself, along with Patrick, interviewing authors every week, which is kind of crazy. But anyway, so I eventually wrote a song about doing NaNoWriMo. And I think I just put that out about 2 years ago. And so I'll probably have that one up on my website front and center. So if you're doing NaNoWriMo, good luck. And if you want a little bit of inspiration or what have you, go and download the song. It's up on my website for free right now, and that is johnanilio.com, and you can follow me at twitter.com/johnanilio, and you can find me on the Facebook and the Google Plus as well. Patrick, what do you have going on this week?
The usual stuff. atfmb.com, twitter.com/atfmb, facebook.com/atfmb, all that, you know, all the usual stuff. Halloween is here. By the time people are listening to this, Halloween will be over. We'll be getting closer to Turkey Day. But I intend to spend as much time as possible between now and then watching scary movies.
Well, that sounds like a plan. That sounds like a plan.
I bought that just for this.
Well, that was good. I think it was well worth it. Whatever you pay for it, it's well worth it. Well, everybody, next week I believe it is just going to be me and Patrick. So if you like this witty banter that happens at the beginning and the end of the show, you get a whole show of that next week. So why did our numbers drop so much the next week?
And you know what was kind of funny is I thought that was tonight.
Yeah.
I did. Yeah. I don't know why I was thinking it was tonight. For some reason I was thinking it was tonight. I was like, oh, we have a guest. And then it was Brian. I was like, oh, we have a guest.
Yeah, a nice, comfortable interview because we know Brian in person. Yeah. So it was nice. So it worked out well. But anyway, everyone, hope you enjoy your week, and I hope you enjoyed your Halloween, and we will see you next time.
Shows up when I'm asleep. I can't believe-